I always start with the fact that a lot was known about progesterone at that time. The compound had been isolated in the 30s, synthesized, and then used in medicine continuously for treatment of menstrual irregularities and for the treatment of infertility. But progesterone is not orally active, so it was always given by injection. At that time, when I worked at this small pharmaceutical company, Syntec, we wanted to develop some drugs of our own, proprietary ones that we could then sell, not on a patent, but sell under the name of Syntec, rather than being just suppliers to other companies. And one of the projects that we selected at that time was to see whether we can make a compound, a progestin, in other words, a compound that has the biological activity of progesterone, or better, but is orally active. And we want to do it for the then uses in medicine, which were menstrual irregularities and infertility. Also, there was someone at the National Cancer Institute, a man named Roy Hertz, who was interested in using progesterone for cervical cancer. That progesterone also could be used as a contraceptive was quite obvious. It was perfectly well known to us. It was something that an Austrian named Ludwig Haberland had already discovered really in the 1920s, early 1930s at Innsbruck. But you want to remember that at that time there was essentially no interest in contraception in the pharmaceutical industry, United States or elsewhere. It was 5 years after the war. The problem was not contraception. At that point, you know, millions of people had died, millions of people postponed having a family and so on. But during the time after we synthesized the compound, and then as it were, we then sent it to a lot of different biologists. And one of the ones that we sent it to was a man named Gregory Pincus, who worked in the United States, had nothing to do with us, who was interested in really the application of oral contraception, the idea that Haberland had, but had much too early. And he was also a very good entrepreneur. He really pushed this very much, Pincus, after that material had already been approved for clinical use by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, in the United States. 3 years later, they permitted it then, these compounds to be used for contraception. The one that we made, norethindrone, is still used by millions of women. And all the subsequent oral contraceptives, about seven, that have been developed are very close chemical relatives of the first compound that we made. I was amused and perhaps even pleased that people said you're responsible in part for that. I think in retrospect, in my opinion, that's too simplified. The 1960s were exactly the right time for an oral contraceptive to be introduced because of all these social movements that are also illustrated here in the exhibition, the Beatles, the drug culture, the hippie culture, and especially the women's liberation movement. And they all were associated with the liberation of sexual behavior, even some promiscuous sexual behavior. At a time when abortion was totally illegal in all countries but the Soviet Union, in a way, and Japan. And that window of opportunity of the 1960s disappeared at the end of the 1960s. So that then became a very hot area of research. There were some 12 or 13 pharmaceutical companies all over the world, big ones, working in the field. 10 years later, there were only four left. Why? Because by the late 1960s, all kinds of things had happened in the area of drug development. There was an enormous tragedy there. In Europe, it's called the Contagan tragedy. It was a drug, a very good sedative that, however, produced very serious birth defects in children of pregnant women. So it was ideal sedative for all people except for pregnant women. But lots of pregnant women, of course, took it. And that was an absolute disaster. And that changed the regulatory practices of many, many governments, and it became much more difficult to develop new drugs. There were much more caution and so on. And since contraceptives is a very special area, because you're not treating anyone for diseases, the two areas that people went away from was contraception and vaccine development, and they both have the same property, namely you treat healthy people who are not willing to tolerate any side effects. In contrast to if you had cancer or something and someone gives you a drug and says, but you're going to, you know, have some side effects, you will tolerate this. You will not do it for contraception because you lead a normal life. So then the side effects were observed, some serious side effects of the pill, which were associated with the then relatively high dosages that were used. And people were wondering, why do you use such high dosages? Because now we use much lower dosages and the side effects are much, much lower. Because the answer was very simple. To do clinical work with women, it had to be done with women, couldn't be done with men because you're testing female contraception. If it failed, she would get pregnant. And abortion was, in fact, illegal at that time. But even if abortion were legal, then she would have to have an abortion, which, of course, is pretty tough. So you started with a very high dose where you're pretty confident it would work and then very gradually reduce it. Whereas ordinary medicine, you would do the reverse. You start with the lowest dose and work up until you find the dose that actually would cause the effect that you want. And that was the problem. And during the time, there were many, many suits then, many millions of dollars of women who suffered from these side effects, blamed the pill, in part correctly so, in part not, but it didn't make any difference. The net result was this enormous litigious situation. At the same time, the regulatory requirements for developing new pills became extremely complicated because of the Contergan and related problems. So pharmaceutical companies walked away from this. And pretty soon, we're now jumping another 20 years later, but the rich world, their own, pharmaceutical companies, their own interest in the rich countries. So they're interested in the diseases of the older people. The older people are more affluent in those countries. They are usually all insured for health things. They suffer from diseases that are chronic diseases. Those are the diseases in which millions and millions of people suffer who are willing to tolerate side effects and are willing to pay for them. Again, in contraception, it's frequently poorer people who need it, especially, and frequently cannot even afford it. Then the religious opposition to it in a number of countries, which again was for some pharmaceutical companies literally a pain in the neck. They were afraid of any boycott, particular Catholic ones in that case, and went away from that. And that, I think, is a pity, but that fact is really the situation.